You're listening to WSHC, the Voice of Shepherd. This is Seven Generations Radio. And with me now is Rhonda Lehman, who is the chair of the Blue Ridge Water Coalition. And Rhonda, welcome to the show. Let's see if we got some volume for you.
Thanks for having me.
Can you, let's.
All right.
There you go. Try it again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good. And it's my pleasure. I did read the article that was in the Observer recently, in which they mentioned your name quite often about the work that you're doing and that the Blue Ridge Water Coalition is doing. Could you talk just a little bit about yourself, what your background is, and how you got involved in this water-related activity in this area?
Well, I am a mom, and that's why I got involved with water. I'm the teen court coordinator for Jefferson County. I live on the Shenandoah River, and when we first moved here, I saw lots of fish dying and lots of fish with sores on it. And over the years, I became active here in Jefferson County in local politics, and we formed a great group of people on the Blue Ridge Mountain to try to deal with some of our 50-year-old runoff issues.
Okay, how many years ago did you start?
We started the Blue Ridge Watershed Coalition. We got together in 2011. And since that time, we've gotten around $70,000 in grant money just for the Blue Ridge Mountain.
Okay, and you had to form a nonprofit in order to get some of that money, I understand, which you did.
Yes, we did.
And I commend you on that.
Thank you.
Now, I'm going to go right to something that interests me, and that is the periodic testing of the water. What is going on with that?
We test every month, and we have for the last 2 years. We have 9 spots on the Blue Ridge that we test, tributaries that capture all the runoff from the big neighborhoods. And we have 3 spots on the Shenandoah River. Actually, it's 4 now. We just added another site so we can source trace some of our pH problems in the Shenandoah River. But basically, we monitor what comes in to West Virginia and the Shenandoah and what we add to it when it leaves.
Okay, what do you test for and how often do you test?
We test monthly, and we are looking for the bars in the Chesapeake Bay mandates, which is phosphates, nitrates, E. coli, coliform. There's guidelines that we have to meet, and there's a big plan for all the Chesapeake Bay watersheds on the East Coast, and we are trying to stay within those parameters. We're trying to identify problems, and then once we identify problems, we go out and look for grants to fix those problems and projects to fix those problems.
Since you've started testing, and when did you start, and what is the trend in water quality among those indicators?
We started our water monitoring program in 2013, and it is with an EPA-certified lab through Shenandoah University, Friends of the Shenandoah River. Karen Anderson is our lab director. And what we've seen, we've identified certain issues. One, phosphates, nitrates go up 46% as the Shenandoah River passes through Jefferson County, which that's a concern. You know, that's a bar that we have to work on, obviously. One big problem we found was a stream in Shenandoah, Gate 2, Little Lake Run is the name of the stream, and it feeds into the Shenandoah directly, and it had extremely high levels of E. coli all year round. Usually you should see those numbers drop in the winter because there isn't growth, and if you don't see those numbers drop, which we haven't, that indicates that there's direct contamination going on, probably from septic systems. So right now we have a septic program on the Blue Ridge where you get your septic tank pumped and we will pay half of that cost for the homeowner. They just send their invoices into us and we submit it to the state and then we get reimbursement for them. And that's, we're hoping, so far we've done about 65 septic tanks on the Blue Ridge. And right now we're hoping to see a change in our water monitoring results because water data, you have to look at it over a period of years. You know, the tail isn't going to come out in 1 month or 2 months. You have to look at the data over a period of time, which we do have 2 years now of consecutive monthly data, which is a big deal.
Other than septic runoff and E. coli, what are the other causes, point sources of pollution?
Well, you always have agricultural runoff, but in Jefferson County, we have the Millville Dam, which seems to act like a big filter for our county. But we see the phosphates go up between Millville and where the rivers meet in Harpers Ferry, And we believe that may have a lot to do with gray lines. Gray lines come from homes, and a lot of people used to put their wash water, say from their laundry, or shower water or kitchen water, would just literally run down out of a pipe and down the road. And there's some neighborhoods on the Blue Ridge you can tell when it's wash day because you see the suds going down the street towards the river.
So what can people do to cut down on that?
Well, the big thing is, you know, you have to have all of your water going to your septic tank and not through a gray line. Gray line is an, you know, antiquated idea. But unfortunately, so many of the homes on the Blue Ridge still have them. The big thing, the big push that we have is trying to teach homeowners how to keep the first inch of rain. Because the average rainfall around here used to be an inch. I kind of think that's going up with global warming and some of the downpours that we see now where we get 4 inches in an hour. But the first inch of water is what you want to keep on your property. You want to slow the water down as it gets to the river because that helps filter it and take all of the contaminants out of it before it hits the water. So we've done other projects on the Blue Ridge. We did one at the Mountain Community Center right at the end of Mission Road where we, it's a really old church, and we put, that's our community center, we put rain barrels all the way around. We did a rain garden, we closed a road, and we stopped a years-old problem there on Route 9 where the water used to come across the road. It's a hydroplaning issue, a lot of accidents there all the time, and we fixed that. And then we had the community come in and show them how we did it, and we encouraged them to do the same in their own yards.
Are rain barrels an important part of this?
I think rain barrels help you keep the water on your property, what comes off your house. If you're putting that into a rain barrel system that you can use for watering your garden or plants or pets or whatever, you know, that's a good way to try to slow down that water. But, you know, plantings and rain gardens are the big thing to try to keep the water on your property.
I'm doubting that you test for this, but I'm very curious about glyphosate.
We do not. We do not. Am I losing it?
There we go. Okay. I wonder. And what do you look at? Things that maybe you should be testing for, do you have those kind of concerns and investigations? Is there any research or can you look at other areas? How do you get indications of what you should be testing for? I know you do get some of it out of these plans. Is that the only place where you get your testing concepts from?
Right now it is because we're such a small group and we are not a group of scientists. You know, I'm a nurse. We have people that we've had people that work for the IRS. We have people that work with computers and data. I mean, you know, it's not really our field of expertise. We're doing what we can do as laypersons. The one thing I would like to start to do, and they're doing it in Pennsylvania and a lot of places through the Isaac Walton League, I think, is look for byproducts of fracking, you know, rolling in our streams. There's certain things that they can test for. Since we don't really know what's in fracking fluids, we can't test specifically. You know, you have to know what you're looking for to be able to test for it. But there are certain things that we can test for in the water, and I'm afraid that might be something that we may have to add to our list in years to come, depending on how the state treats us.
Fracking fluids.
Correct. The drill cuttings is the technical term, I suppose, for the frack waste. Mm-hmm. That comes up from the wells during the process. Mm-hmm.
And how close is that to us? And does it is it currently getting into our system at all? Do you know anything about whether it is coming into our system?
In the rest of the state, yes. There are contaminated streams and rivers in the rest of the state. Right here in Jefferson County, we're lucky because we're on the other side of the Continental Divide. We do not have fracking in the Eastern Panhandle yet, because we are on a high shelf of the Marcellus Shale, and so we're already, the shale is already too close to the water, so it's not a good place to actually frack. But our state needs a place to put the millions of gallons generated and fracking the wells in the rest of the state. The USGS says that we have 145,000 wells in West Virginia alone. Now, the West Virginia DEP says we have 55,000 active and 12,000 inactive. But I find multiple sources, U.S. Geological Survey, that sort of thing, that say there's 145,000 wells in West Virginia. They are not in this part of the state, but they want to put the waste from that in this part of the state in Berkeley County. And Berkeley County's landfill sits on 3 geological fault lines, which is a direct pathway to the water underneath. And because of us living in the karst here, we have so much limestone underneath us. The ground, you know, the water travels underground. It's kind of like Swiss cheese under our feet. So you can have a dairy farm in Berkeley County that's contaminating the middle of the Shenandoah River in Jefferson County because of the way that the karst is here. So, you know, if they would put that waste into the Berkeley landfill, we would be in big trouble. It would contaminate Jefferson County's water. And in fact, when they put that landfill in, all the geologists said that there would be direct contamination just from the leachate. And leachate is that fluid that collects at the bottom of a landfill. And every year they release, and they're allowed to, 6 million gallons of this leachate into the Berkeley wastewater treatment system, which is already very subpar. And that is treated and then dumped into the Opecan Creek. Now, if you add drill cuttings, yeah, I mean, that's bad alone. The leachate alone.
I live on the Opecan. So.
I'm sorry.
That hurt.
I'm sorry. I told people this morning, if you don't want to be depressed, don't listen. If you want your grandkids to have clean water, please listen. But basically, if you add drill cuttings to that leachate, then you're putting in all that fracking waste, 702 of Halliburton's finest chemical slurries, right into the waters in Berkeley and Jefferson County, because there's no treatment system known to man in this world right now that can take out what fracking puts into water. What's water is used in fracking, it cannot be reclaimed. It cannot be used again. We lose that from the system, and it's the first time in the Earth's history that we are taking water from the cycle that can't be replaced. Mm-hmm. We can't put it back.
Mm-hmm. What has been the role of the DEP in relation to the things you're concerned about?
Honestly, allowing it to happen. The DEP tends to test in areas and in ways that show that there's no problem. There's no contamination. There's no problem. It's getting a little harder for them to deny it, because right now, say, Fayette County, West Virginia, you have the highest leukemia rate in the state. They have over 15 million barrels of this waste in their ground. And a judge actually stopped them from injecting this waste into the ground because they didn't have a permit. The DEP came along just this year, just this past spring, and said, you know what? We need somewhere to put this waste, so go ahead. Keep doing what you're doing. Now, since that time, they just stopped it. But it's already too late for the people of Fayette County. They have the highest leukemia rate. And I don't mean leukemia. Usually you see environmental effects in children and the elderly first. Their leukemia rate is across the board. It's everybody. And so, you know, you can't deny that we're having a definite negative impact on the health and lives of West Virginians right now.
Do you have periodic meetings? And if you do, where, when, that sort of thing?
We meet. It varies. We have a Facebook page, Blue Ridge Watershed Coalition, and we usually post the meeting dates up on there. Sometimes it makes the paper when we have time to do it. Like I said, we're about 11 really dedicated volunteers who have very busy lives right now, but we meet monthly, and, you know, we have a lot of initiatives. We have a lot of ideas. We're going for a big NIFWIF grant next year to try to work on some of the runoff issues in Shenandale. There's many homes in Shenandale that their backyards get washed out every time it rains. And we think we can help fix some of those issues, because that all makes water quality better till it gets to the river.
What is going on with vegetation to filter out some of the runoff?
We like to use prairie grasses and prairie gardens and that sort of thing. And we have a master gardener who used to be on our board. Now she's too busy, but she still consults for us. And we are happy to show homeowners, you know, what they should plant, how they should plant it, where they should plant it. We like to have indigenous plants planted. We don't like to introduce things that aren't, you know, known to the area.
I just got back from a couple of days of kayaking on the Shenandoah up in the George Washington National Forest area, and I noticed there's lots of cattle in the river.
Oh, my. Well, George Washington National Forest right now, unfortunately, has a bigger problem than cattle in the river. There was a discussion about fracking the George Washington National Forest, which runs off into the James River, the Shenandoah, and the Potomac Rivers, so that's the water source for millions here in the D.C., Virginia area. Initially, it was the Department of Forestry's decision to allow fracking or not. And they had a lot of weigh-in from watershed group like ours and local governments all the way from Charlestown, West Virginia to Roanoke. And through D.C., all the local governments weighed in and said, we don't want fracking in this forest. And so the forestry division said, okay, we're not going to frack this forest. Just this past November, the Department of the Interior overturned that decision and said, why is your national park any different than all the rest? You know, Yosemite, all the parks out west have been fracked. And so they said, you know, we're not going to give you any special consideration, basically. And they overturned the decision. So now, yes, they can frack the George Washington National Forest. And there are several leases out there. But some companies are walking away from the leases right now. Right now in the gas industry, because oil has gotten so cheap. It actually costs, I think Chesapeake Energy is spending $4.09 to make $1 right now because of what has happened to the market. But in order to keep the investors in line, they have to keep producing. And the best way to produce is to keep fracking new wells, because when you initially frack a well, you get the mother load of gas that you're going to get off of that well. So they just keep starting new ones over and over and over again because they have to keep their production numbers up to show the investors, hey, this is how much we can produce. So even though the market for natural gas has kind of tanked, you know, excuse the pun, but they still have to keep the production numbers up. And so they're doing this furious fracking everywhere to keep those numbers up to say, hey, we got this great energy source for the next 100 years. And a lot of people say, no, it's not 100 years. It's about 10 years. But in the meantime, the damage that they're going to do to the water and to the environment all across this country, is we can't fix it.
You mentioned fish earlier. I love all the critters that live in the rivers, and I'm sure you do too.
Yes.
just being up on the upper Shenandoah area, I noticed the water is clearer up there than it is down here, and also the grass has looked a lot better. I'm wondering, do you do monitoring of grass health and fish health in this area?
Well, you got to remember, the more green you have in the water, the more grasses and things that you have in the water, the more that's robbing from the rest of the environment. You know, that's the Chesapeake Bay's problem, is that from the chem lawn services and that sort of thing that have washed in the Chesapeake Bay, the plants have taken away all the, it just disrupts the balance.
Explain that a little bit better. I'm not following you there. Now you're saying,
okay, now I got to put my science hat on.
Sorry. Thank you.
but basically, you know, the fish start to, when you have too much plant life in the water, then the fish start to die out because they can't get the oxygen that they need. Let me back that up a little bit. You're getting above my pay grade here.
Oh, that's all right. We don't need to, we don't need to do that. But yeah, it would be nice to kind of connect the dots here with some of our fishery biologists. Maybe I need to get Than hit in here from the fisheries.
I agree.
And talk about some of this. Good idea to have them in here with you, maybe.
I can tell you that I know that the bass population in the Shenandoah, at least in our neck of the woods, has gotten a lot better. We haven't seen any bass with lesions for a very long time. And, you know, 10 years ago, just about everyone you caught had lesions on it. You would see baby bass floating down the river, kind of belly up, kind of half alive. If you took them out and held them in a bucket, they'd be dead in 15 minutes. We don't see that now. I think the fish have really come back. I have big largemouth nests close to where we kayak every day, and that's gotten really healthy. So the fish are coming back, which makes me feel a little better. But, you know, we're constantly watching to see what we can improve. We actually have lasers in the river that read the turbidity and the sediment loads in the river, which is what's going to help us with the TMDLs, which is the total maximum daily load. And those are the targets that we need to hit for the Chesapeake Bay mandates. And if you're not hitting those targets, that's what can cause the EPA to come in and say, we have to put these expensive mandates on you because, you know, you guys are polluting the Chesapeake Bay. We're trying to stay ahead of that. And that's why it's so important that our lab results are done at a lab with EPA accepted results.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the indication is that we are within EPA limits. Is that what you're saying?
We're close.
Okay.
We're close, but we're better than we used to be, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of changing in agriculture. There's a lot of things farmers can do to keep the runoff from their land from reaching the river, mm-hmm. or at least slowing it down so more can filter out. And the farmers in this area are up to date. You know, they understand what they need to do, and they're doing it. You know, they may not be real happy about it, but they're doing it. And I really, like I said, what we're seeing in the Shenandoah is the problem isn't necessarily even runoff from agriculture. It's kind of what the developments on the Blue Ridge are kind of doing, because they're old developments that have no stormwater runoff control at all.
So when you see like heavy rain periods, particularly early summer, is that when you get the spikes in some of these indicators?
You can, yes, or when the leaves are all down on the ground and you get a heavy rain, you'll see a spike in nitrates. The big thing is slowing the water down. My neighborhood, which is just a small little neighborhood, Shannon Wood, we're only 28 houses, but we have a young man that lives in our neighborhood who has put these, you know, there's the low spot in the neighborhood where all the water's going to run right to the river. And because we're right on the river, it's a short distance. And he has put all these barriers up in the stream where all the water goes out to slow it down. And so the silt and everything falls out in the leaves and the wood and everything that he's put in there. And so when the water hits the river, it's not brown. You know, when you see the heavy rain, you'll see that tan water in the river. And that's just from the runoff.
What is he using?
He uses, he'll bring home big pieces of concrete that were broken up from a job, from a project, you know, things that they need to get rid of, concrete, wood, that sort of thing. And he just puts these barriers. It's almost like steps. The water leaves our neighborhood in steps. And it has, but it goes through lots of things that are filtering it out before it gets to the river. He's really, I hope to make a video to show other neighborhoods how to do this.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great.
Yeah, because he's done such a good job of it. If we all did that, we'd be in good shape.
So how much time do you put in on this work yourself in an average week?
In an average week, probably about 16 hours, because I do a lot of reading. You know, I manage the septic program. There's always pushing stuff on Facebook, on social media, you know, to keep people aware. It all depends. I'd say anywhere from 8 to 16 hours. Now, it's fair week. It's Jefferson County Fair Week. So we'll have a booth at the fair in Building 2, and we'll be out there every night. And we like to show people which watershed they live in and how they can have a positive impact on their water.
So I encourage everyone, check out the Blue Ridge Water Coalition Facebook page and learn about when their next meeting is, and show up there and lend a hand. I'm sure you guys can use some help, right?
Always can use help. And brwc.org is where you can find all those monitoring results for the past 2 years. And it's updated pretty regularly. Like I said, we all have jobs and lives separate of this. This is kind of our hobby.
Okay. Any other thoughts you want to pass along while you're here?
Pay attention to fracking in West Virginia when they try to bring that waste here, and they will again. Right now we're saved by legislation, but they try to come after it every year, and we are going to need people. The only thing that beats big industry is lots and lots of people and the voices of those people. That's the only thing that's been effective.
So there is legislation currently blocking fracking waste from going into the Hedgesville site?
Basically, yes. They say counties that contain karst, you can't put it in those counties. And Senator Herb Snyder has kept us safe so far. And Senator John Unger also has helped us a lot with water legislation. But, you know, things got sort of sidetracked with the tank rules because of the spill in the Elk River. And they took all the teeth out of the tank rules this last legislative session, because in West Virginia, our House went from blue, Democratic, to red. And so a lot of the positive impacts that our blue house had in the session before was taken away in this past session, unfortunately. So even tank legislation and protecting waterways from chemical storage has been greatly affected. I mean, they basically put riders in there that make most tanks. You don't have to check on what's in there. You don't have to pay attention to where they are in relation to intake for water sources. It's really sad. In West Virginia, we have to fight, and we have to be loud about it, because West Virginia has a long history of ignoring what it does to its people and its natural resources when they take away the coal and the gas. I mean, just imagine, have you ever known an extraction community with healthy, wealthy, well-educated, happy communities?
Yeah, it's only the people that kind of sitting on top of that industry that are getting the benefits from it, it seems.
That's right. And the communities where they extract don't get any of those benefits. Hmm. Very true. Yeah, and that's the way it is across the board. So, you know, we're getting to the point where we have to band together if we're going to have any impact and keep our water clean.
I wanted to ask you about the water plans. Now, I know after the Elk River spill, there was, well, maybe, I don't know if it was the Elk River or, but West Virginia did pass legislation that required water quality plans for every treatment site. And they were going to have to look upstream, determine what the sources of potential contamination were, and then to have mitigation plans for all of that. You familiar with that, and do you know what's happened to it?
A little bit. West Virginia Rivers Coalition has done a lot of work in that area, and unfortunately, as I mentioned, this past legislative session, this past winter, they took all the teeth out of a lot of that. And what they did is they changed the parameters for the streams that are considered, you know, class one streams that you have to watch because they're drinking water for large numbers of people. They actually took all the teeth out of it. So, and a lot of times they'll put those rules in, but they won't put any funding in to make those things happen. So it really comes down to individual groups like the Blue Ridge Watershed Coalition kind of monitoring their own stuff and watching what's going on and being proactive and going out and getting grants to fix the problems, because our state is invested in making money from extraction, mm-hmm. Period. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about water. It's about making money from extraction.
It seems to be behind everything when you talk about
it is.
Problems. You're going to have money somewhere lurking behind it. Do you interact at all with the health department?
I have. We have several board members that have served on the Board of Health and on our board as well. We're aware, and they were actually a partner in the project that I mentioned before at the Mount Community Center. They donated a tank to us that we buried in the ground to capture that water coming off the community center and also provide a dry hydrant for the fire company, which is next door. So instead of them having to go to the river, eventually they're going to be able to get that water just from the rainwater that came off of the building.
Mm-hmm. Just wondering if the health department is doing independent testing that correlates with the testing that you do?
Not that I'm aware of. If they do any testing, I would say it would have to be because there's been a specific, you know, that maybe there's an outbreak of illness. Mm-hmm. But no, we're not aware of any of the testing that they do. The state does do some testing, but as I said, their testing tends to be centered around, oh, gas isn't the problem, or coal isn't the problem, or agricultural is, you know, they're not looking for problems. They're looking to prove that everything's okay. And that's a lot of the problem with the water monitoring is there's a lot of, there's not a lot of communication. You know, Carl Drumgoole, our vice chair, he spends a lot of time looking at results from other people that are testing in our area, but we don't collaborate with them, and that's not right. Now, Shenandoah University, Karen Anderson, Friends of the Shenandoah River, just had a water monitoring conference last week where the EPA came out, and they are talking about how to incorporate the water sampling results from NGOs, non-government organizations like us, into the Chesapeake Bay model, which is what we want. We want fact in that model. We don't want it to be modeled off of places that are similar to ours. I don't think there's any place similar to ours. You know, every place has its own, you know, individual characteristics. And so they're actually they're looking at how to take our results now and put it into the federal plan. And Dr. Anderson also took members of the EPA for a canoe kayak trip down the Shenandoah as well to show them what we're trying to protect. So, you know, there are a lot of moves in the right direction with the EPA, but as you know, the EPA has become a dirty word in politics, and especially in West Virginia, which is ridiculous. We're running out of coal. It has nothing to do with regulation. We're running out of coal.
Right. But it seems like a lot of times these regulatory agencies like the EPA are sometimes just being used to do the bidding of big business and to give permits. So they're saying it's okay. They give permits away. This is what they do.
Right.
You know, the same thing happened in the Gulf of Mexico. It's okay to do this and it's okay to do that. Yeah?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But we have to hope they'll be our friends and take our data and incorporate it into that model so that we can, you know, attack the real problems. And that's what our group is about, attacking the real problems.
Well, I'm glad we have you. You're one of our great resources of this region.
Thank
you so much for coming in, Rhonda. Rhonda Lehman, the chair of the Blue Ridge Water Coalition, and she's working hard to try to keep our water safe. She encourages, and I encourage you to join her, and let's work together on this. It takes a lot of people to cope with big money. So, thank you. Anything you want to add?
Thank you for having me. Thanks for being an advocate and helping us get the word out. We all need water.
My pleasure. So you've been listening to Seven Generations Radio on WSHC Shepherdstown, the voice of Shepherd. Thank you for tuning in.